More communal violence and hate speech in India, and a Prime Minister under pressure to stop them. Opposition parties are accusing him of staying silent, but will he act? And what will be the fallout of rising hate speech on India's future? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Kim Vinell. India's history contains centuries of diversity and coexistence between different groups. But its present times are marked by violence and hate speech against minorities. Some politicians, especially those with ties to the governing BJP party, are accused of inciting and promoting that violence. Indian and global human rights watchdogs say the frequency of attacks has been on the rise since 2014, the year Narendra Modi became Prime Minister. Some opposition parties accuse him of ignoring the issue, and they're warning Modi the fallout could devastate India's cultural diversity. India's 13 main opposition parties signed a statement saying, "We are extremely concerned with the growing incidence of hate speech in the country by people who appear to have official patronage and against whom no meaningful and strong action is being taken. We strongly condemn the recent outburst of communal violence witnessed across several states. We are deeply concerned as reports indicate that there is a sinister pattern in the areas where these incidents have occurred. Incendiary hate speeches preceded the aggressive armed religious processions, unleashing communal violence." Well, Hindu hardline leaders have held meetings to discuss rising tensions around hate speech directed against Muslims. In recent days, a spate of incidents around the Hindu festival of Ram Navami have led to violence in some states. And India's Supreme Court is hearing a motion for political rallies that promote hate speech to be stopped. All right, let's bring in our guest from New Delhi, Sudhanshu Mittal, Bharatiya Janata Party leader and author of RSS, Building India Through Sewa. And from Washington, D.C., Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO of the Center for Countering Digital Hate. And also from New Delhi, Saba Naqvi, an independent journalist. Thank you all very much for joining us here on Inside Story. I'd like to start with you, Saba Naqvi, if I may. As we've been saying, dozens of videos have been going viral on social media since Sunday, showing processions of Hindu men, some with sticks, some with swords, stopping at Muslim neighbourhoods, basically looking to provocate, to scare, to intimidate. Just give our international audience a sense of what the situation is right now. How bad is it?
It's unprecedented. There is a rash of hate speech, hate processions. They are targeting mosques. They go and stand outside mosques. We can visibly see members of the procession trying to enter the mosque and raise and have a saffron flag over there. There have been speeches made threatening the rape of Muslim women. It's horrific. It's unprecedented. We are a country which has known communal violence between communities, but what is being allowed? These incidents have taken place in seven Indian states, as many as seven Indian states. And this follows a sort of profiling of the hijab, the dress of a section of the Muslim community, a question over halal meat. It follows there is just, that's the constant campaigning right now. There's constant mobilization on identity issues and mobilization in a way which is scary and terrifying for Indian Muslims, which is a very, very large minority and one of the largest populations in the world of the Muslim community.
I want to cross over to Imran Ahmed, who has a very particular specialization in things that happen online: trolling, identity-based hate, misinformation, conspiracy theories, modern extremism. Mr. Ahmed, how does hate speech take such a hold where it boils over into physical violence, as we've seen it happening? From a psychological standpoint, how does it take hold like that?
Well, I think one of the things to remember is that the people using social media are human beings, and the messages they're receiving online they are absorbing and using in their offline life too. And that seems sort of axiomatic and pretty straightforward, pretty obvious, really, when you think about it. And India's government at the moment has shown a real aptitude for using the various tools that digital platforms, primarily based in the United States, primarily using a United States rule set and enforcement of their rules, very poor enforcement of their rules, to be frank, have given them, which are the ability to mass proselytize misinformation and hatred to tens of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people at very rapid speed for zero cost. And that's why these platforms, which are, of course, incredibly cheap to use, virtually nothing, are so powerful as a mechanism for manipulation of the public.
Mm. We'll talk a little bit later about what's being done to try and combat that. But for now, I'd like to cross over to Sudhanshu Mittal. The ruling BJP party has been accused of not just allowing this, but of encouraging it, hate speech, communal violence. As a member of that party, what's your assessment? What's your reaction?
I would reject the charge outright. But before I do that, what I heard from Sabha Naqvi is despicable. It is the most horrifying lie which is there to provoke a communally charged environment. Look how blatantly she's communal in her outburst against the people who themselves are the victims. Now, here is a Hindu festival which is being celebrated, and there's a Shobha Yatra which is going. Now, stones are stone peddling is taking place. The procession is attacked. And look, whom does she want to blame? She wants to blame the people who are celebrating their own religious festival. It is this narrative which has resulted in what is happening.
But if I can interrupt you, there has been documented video, which I believe we have. We have the video. We have video. And it's gone around the world. No, please.
Why just one video? But why just one video? Haven't you seen the 50 videos where you have mosques storing stones, where people wearing Muslim caps are firing at the police, where they have swords, they have knives, in which they're stabbing? Haven't you seen all those videos?
So are you rejecting outright? Can I just ask the question? Are you rejecting, are you rejecting outright that there is any discrimination, communal violence happening, targeting the minorities, which are... In this case, we're talking about Muslims.
Absolutely.
So you don't even think it exists?
Absolutely. I reject it outright.
Right.
I reject it outright. And let's come down to the hate speech also. When one gentleman belonging to the Hindu party was making a hate speech, he was arrested and he was not released for 2 months. Whereas...
He wasn't released for 2 hours. Right.
No. This is completely wrong. I have the document here, which shows that he was in jail for two months.
2 months, sorry, that was my question.
He was put behind bar for 2 months.
Right.
Yeah, he was... And you have an OAC who made the worst speech. He says, give me 15 minutes and I will kill all the Hindus. He's out and he's been acquitted by a state which is ruled by the opposition.
Okay.
So please, the problem is instead of being equitable about condemning anybody who takes law in his own hands, we have been taking sides to paint a picture to defame India, whereas the truth is that law of land, anybody who violates has to be punished, be it the Hindus, be it the Muslims. Nobody has the privilege of taking law in his own hand.
Sure.
And can you imagine that if the majority community cannot even celebrate?
But just to be clear, before we move on, you're saying that you do not think that there is such thing as targeted violence happening from Hindu nationalists against the Muslim minority. You just do not think it's happening.
There's nothing called Hindu nationalists.
Right.
I mean, there is a religious identity, but what do you mean Hindu nationalists? Muslims are not nationalists?
No, what I'm talking about is actually what's being called a Hindu supremacist ideology. Sabha Naqvi, I'd like to bring you in and just get your reaction to that, if I may.
Look, I'd say that the issue is of saving India's constitution. India is a secular country. We have a fabulous constitution. And there is, of course, denial. We are told day in and day out that sort of the social media messaging is that Hindus are being attacked by Muslims. Muslims are attacking Hindus to get themselves killed, arrested, to hoist the flags, to stop, to raise questions on them, on their food, on their dress. No, but they deserve it. They are provoking it. Anyway, that's the kind of typical trope of all right-wing ideology. And I do not want to have a sort of a fight or a... It's gone beyond that. The situation is bad. It is deliberate. It is not being stopped. And it has been in a university in Delhi, one of India's best universities, students were beaten up for eating meat on a particular day because a section of the students said, we are doing a puja over here, so you cannot eat meat, even though there is no law about it. Beyond that, homes of Muslims in the state of Madhya Pradesh have been demolished on the grounds that they threw stones at a procession passing through. Now, if you give me a little bit of time, India was always negotiating from the time of the partition and our foundation, the processions going through certain areas, there was always a protocol for it. It was not allowed. The police would not allow certain processions to go through certain areas where other communities live. All of that does not happen anymore. What the police does is that these processions, which are abusing a particular community, which are defaming their own religion, by the way, if you hear the kind of language, no religion can be about that. You have these groups just going through these areas, abusing, trying, we have visuals again and again,
okay,
trying to climb onto mosques. And let me just say, 2 years ago in Delhi, there were riots and as many as 14 mosques were attacked, burned, yeah, and 14. And let me say this on the record, it was all there, small mosques, not big mosques, in the city where I live. It happened here.
Okay.
So let's not deceive ourselves.
Oh, no,
I hear you.
My role is to moderate and make sure that we give equal time to all of our panelists. I can see you raising your hand, Sudhanshu Mittal. What did you want to add?
Again, I said it is this kind of communal hatred which is responsible for what is happening today. Look at the state of Rajasthan, which is ruled by the opposition, not BJP. And you have processions. The processions were given permission by Congress, and she wants to blame us for this. You know, this kind, she's a Muslim, and this kind of venomous outburst against the Hindus is likely responsible for provoking her own community. She is giving them a feeling of victimhood. Give me one instance where the government of the day has discriminated against the Muslims. Give me one instance where the government or UP or any of the BJP states have given one favor to the Hindus.
Sure.
They have looked at the constitution and said everybody is equal.
I think we can
try and have
a constructive debate. We have Saba Naqvi on as an independent journalist. Her religion or otherwise is not part of this discussion. I'd like to cross over now to Imran Ahmed, if I may. Are people, and I'm not just talking about India, I'm talking about in general, are people manipulated to increase polarization? Or are actors capitalizing on fear and anger that already exists?
Well, I mean, one of the things that's changed in the last few years is the elevation of that which differs us from that which unites us. And the elevation as well in negative partisanship, so the amount of campaigning which is based on hatred of another. And that's primarily based on the fact that we've shifted a lot of our discourse, a lot of our political discussion to platforms that specifically target and amplify, elevate that which is most contentious. Because it's contentious, keeps us on the platforms. And over 10 years, we've indulged in an experiment around the world as to what would happen if we network 4.5 billion people and then increase the temperature. And you get the kind of, you know, you see negative partisanship rising around the world. People hate the other party more than they like their own. You see the sort of the competitive advantage that hateful speech gives to political parties. And this is just an epiphenomenon, this desiccated debate right now. is an epiphenomenon of a broader problem. And in one respect, listening to sort of, you know, one side, which is essentially, if for example, the Indian government did care about hate speech, then it would be doing a lot more than it's doing at the moment. I mean, its argument seems to be we're doing nothing, you know, to either solve or to exacerbate. You can believe for yourself whether or not you believe that's true. And I mean, and of course, that comes with a set of political behaviours. I mean, we've seen this played out. This could be Ukraine right now. This could be a Putin puppet talking right now on one side and a Ukrainian activist on the other side. This could be Democrats and Republicans under Trump. It could be Brexit and Remain under 6 years ago when I first started studying this topic. It could be right now a supporter of Le Pen or Macron in France. Mm. It's as desiccated and familiar a trope now that we pull out a defender of hatred on social media and someone who represents the victims of that hatred on social media. When in fact, what we should be focusing on is that social media itself and the dynamics and the economics that underpin the dynamics of those platforms is the problem, no matter what sort of pound shop Putin has to say about it.
I want to ask, you raised a very good point and made some very good analogies. I'd like to ask you, Sabah Naqvi, what has the Indian government done or not done? What has Narendra Modi said about this issue?
After the recent round of violence, he has said nothing. There has been an arrest today in Delhi of a leader of a group called the Vishwa Hindu Parishad. I'd just like to make one point. I am a political journalist. I have a book out on the BJP. I've interviewed the former Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee. I even interviewed Mr. Narendra Modi before he became Chief Minister. And of course, he does not give press conferences and all. So I am not somebody, I have been forced to use my social media presence, my columns, to highlight what I think is going wrong in the country. I'm not there as an activist speaking only for a community. I'm there as a journalist watching my constitutional values just get destroyed. So I'd like to make that very clear. And I know Mr. Sudhanshu Mittal. We have met each other. I know most of the people in the BJP are known to me. So, you know, so this is not that simple as it, some of us are being fought. And he sits there and says, she is a Muslim. You know,
which is when I interrupted, because like I said, the point is not, we are not wanting to descend into personal attacks, that this is not the forum. Yes, this is a forum to have constructive discussion. So I just want to come back. And that is why we brought you on the program as an independent journalist. So I just want to come back to that question. We hear you. I want to come back to that question. What has Narendra Modi done to, or what has he said about this whole issue?
In this time, he has said nothing. In fact, the opposition leaders, a lot of them have issued a letter saying, are we to live in a state of permanent polarization? And can the Prime Minister please speak up and stop this? Nothing has been said so far. What he has done in the past is he has a slogan which goes as Sabka Saath, Sabka Vikas, which means with all, for everyone, development for everyone. So that slogan is said that the Prime Minister represents that. That is how the BJP does its political messaging. But on the ground, all of this happens. All of this is happening, particularly right now, in a sort of alarming way. And all right-minded Indians, and there are many, be of any religion, are out there raising this issue today.
Sure. Sudhanshu Mittal, I can see you want to respond. Please go ahead.
Firstly, the law and order is a state subject and it is not controlled by the center. So what was said by the earlier speaker as well as Sabha, that government is not doing anything about it. There is a law in existence which punishes anything which is hateful and which is beyond the what is guaranteed under the constitution, under freedom of speech. So that's the first point. Second point, unequivocally, Mr. Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister, has so many times condemned any hate speech by anybody. The only difference is he doesn't make a differentiation. He doesn't say Muslims have no right. He does not say Hindus have no right. He says no Indian has any right to take law in his own hand, or any hate speech can be permitted. Law will take its own course the moment anybody violates the law. So as far as constitution is concerned, that's the sacred book which this government has been upholding. Thirdly, please understand that the writings have taken place in states which are largely governed by the opposition. Rajasthan, it has happened in Andhra Pradesh, it has happened in Telangana, it has happened in Kerala, it has happened in West Bengal. You know, the state of ruled by the opposition, they have a responsibility of looking after the law and order situation. So to say, you know, to now portray that this is a design by the government, where is the design? Give me one statement by the government, either of the state or the center ruled by BJP, which discriminates, which says we will permit anybody to take law in his own hand. We have always sworn by the constitution, that's what we have enforced. She herself has today conceded that one person belonging to a religious group, a Hindu religious group, has been arrested.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, that the message is that no one is above the law, regardless of their religious beliefs. I hear what you're saying. I'd like to cross over to Imran Ahmed. Rights groups have asked Facebook to release a report into hate speech in India, which it commissioned in 2020. It hasn't been released. I want to come back to that central question of how much responsibility do social networks bear?
Well, I mean, they won't release the report because it'll be a devastating indictment of their failure to enforce their own community standards. And of course they bear responsibility. I mean, when you are aware of a problem, when you allow that problem to happen, and you continue to profit from that problem happening, you're pretty liable, aren't you, vicariously for the harm that's being created. And I mean, I think that's one of the biggest problems that we face in the world right now, is that we have a lack of accountability and responsibility for things that are said online. I mean, every now and then someone will get pulled onto a TV show where they'll bluster and lie about how they haven't been encouraging hate speech, when in fact everyone knows they have. And the net effect of their social media presence is to increase the amount of threat against innocent people. And I think that we have to look at the actual platforms themselves and see how we can hold them accountable. In the United States, we have Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act 1996, which actually prohibits platforms from being held liable for third-party speech on their sites. And there are a number of different ideas for how that could be changed. For example, that liability shield might be removed where there are serious human rights violations. That's something that Ro Khanna, for example, the congressman from California, has suggested. There's even been people saying we should remove that shield entirely so that platforms can be held liable. Because the toll for their indifference and for their lazy, greedy monetization of hate speech and enabling of hate speech is, of course, felt in deaths. It's felt in lives lost. The pandemic, for example, in which millions of people died thanks to misinformation spread on their platforms, whether that be the Rohingya Muslim in Burma, whether that be the people of Ukraine now, because let's not forget, in that conflict in the Ukraine right now, the first weapons the Russians deployed were not missiles and tanks. They were lies and misinformation. And that playbook is actually the most sophisticated. The BJP is one of the biggest super producers of misinformation and lies about Muslims worldwide. Now, that has a net effect on humanity. And it
reduces... I take offense to this. No,
I'm sorry, sir.
Sir,
you've lied enough. It's my turn.
No business to make a charge.
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. We cannot. I'm letting him have his say. And as the moderator here, you have to accept that he is sharing his analysis with us. And do you know what? Actually, my apologies, but that is time. So we're going to have to leave it there. All right. Hey, thank you very much to all of our guests, Sudhanshu Mittal, Imran Ahmed and Saba Naqvi. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Kim Vanel, and the whole team here in Doha. Bye-bye for now.